Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Beer Jerk podcast. My name is Matt.
And I'm Luke.
Beer Jerk is an online store and importer and physical store and a bar here in Auckland, New Zealand, where we do a bunch of stuff, and now we've decided to start a podcast to talk to you guys about beer.
We do a lot of stuff really, don't we?
We do too much stuff. We should stop doing stuff.
Considering Beer Jerk has 3 employees, it's me, Matt, and Tom runs our warehouse.
One day we'll get Tom on the podcast to grump at us.
Well, I think Tom would just sit here in silence.
Well, probably. He might be here now. Anyway, what have you been drinking this week, Luke?
Well, maybe you could pour something for us to drink while I regale you with stories of drinking Satan. So I'm not going to go on about it too much, but we, by we, I mean Small Gods Brewing, which is us. That have been doing a bunch of collaborations with our mates all over New Zealand. We brewed a gunpowder bock with our good friend Mike Cheer. So, thank you. So we're not going to get into it because that'll be our beer of the week in a few weeks and we'll be chatting about it then. Cheers, Matt.
Cheers.
The bock is pretty fantastic. So we released it at our warehouse bar, the Frigian Flagon, on Friday. I had probably 4 glasses of it. It was very enjoyable.
Yeah, it's nice and drinkable. It's one of the things that surprised me about it coming out. We knew it was going to be a pretty aggressive beer, but just the dry finish makes it really nice and easy going.
Yep, really unique beer. I also had Sun and Glory from Nu Nu Nu.
Oh, that's their cherry Berlinerweiss, right?
Yeah, kettle sour. I think it's 2.4%. So I had that on Sunday when we had we did a pairing with desserts and beers at the Frigian Flagon. So that was paired with a really nice cherry cheesecake by the Pie Piper.
Oh, nice.
And just the fattiness of the cheesecake just went so beautifully just the sharpness of the sour. They just cut through it like a knife.
Well, it's so good to have that kind of contrast in there.
And the other pairing I had was Sin Eater, which has just been rebrewed. So that's brewed by our mate Kieran at North End. So that's another Small Gods collaboration that we did with Kieran last year. And he's just rebrewed it, which is amazing news. So that's a beautiful, sort of like an elevated oat mild. And that went really nicely with the pecan pie.
Yeah, I was actually having that last night as well, having a chat to our good friend David Moyner online about how he thinks this batch is better than the first one. So I've been enjoying that.
Likely because we helped brew the last one, so we're probably fucking around in the brewery quite a lot. Maybe Kieran could focus on this next batch.
Throwing him off his game. and the other beer I've been drinking this week is, I think last night I had a can of Yellowhammer from Parrot Dog.
Classic.
Well, it's hardly classic, it's pretty new.
Modern classic.
Yeah, it's their new Session Hazy Pale Ale. Mm-hmm. I think Parrot Dog are probably putting out the best core range of beers in the country at the moment. Just quality versus price, I've been having them a lot as a go-to.
Yeah, and just so easily available. Obviously, everything's easily available to us because we've got an office above the best beer shop in the country. But when you're caught short in other places and fucking supermarkets.
Yeah, Parrot Dog is a great go-to for me for that kind of stuff. And what else have you been into this week, Luke?
I've been reading. I really like this category of books that we're reading, but I think we might just run out of beer books after there's probably only 20 like really great beer books.
Oh, we'll see how we go.
Okay. So I went to the library this week and I got The Beer Kitchen by Melissa Cole. So Melissa Cole is a fantastic beer writer and beer judge. She's got an amazing sense of taste, and I just really enjoy her writings and the way she looks at things. So it's a recipe book, but there's just so much more about the history of beer, flavour, sort of going into the science of it a little bit. And the part that really struck me that I was reading last night was she's talking about different flavour compounds and how flavour works and how, well, I suppose there's no such scientific thing as flavour. There are flavour particles in food, but flavour is just the perception in your own brain, right?
Well, it's such a subjective thing. It's one of the things that we went over a lot when I did my beer judging course was if you taste something, you're not wrong. It's everyone's experience of flavour is different. And like to some people, coriander tastes like soap and Brussels sprouts taste like death. but some people love both of those things, or one or not the other. So people have very different experiences eating and drinking the same things.
And that's interesting. I think people dislike Brussels sprouts because of the bitterness, which of course is so prevalent in IPAs, the most popular beer style. And I know when I'm chatting to people in our bar, and they'll just come in and say, I don't like beer. And generally that is just that they don't like bitterness and they don't like shit beer.
Well, it's one of the things that I think a lot of people, I actually wrote an article about this for Pursuit of Hoppiness a while ago, is when you're trying to introduce people to beer that isn't your standard fizzy yellow lager. So many, because as you say, IPA is the predominant beer style. Mm. So many people try and introduce their friends to craft beer with, here, try a Hop Zombie, try a Knife Party, and just like these big, bitter, aggressive IPAs that we love, but are an acquired taste. And some people just don't acquire it. But there are dark beers and fruited sours and delicate saisons and toffee biscuit English bitters that, just because you love IPAs doesn't mean that that's the right beer style for everyone.
Well, yeah, there's just a world of variety, so much more so than wine, for example, in beer. You've got so much, you've got more ingredients to work with.
Well, yeah, so it's one of the things that I like about beer and like about experimentation is like, if you want to make a beer that tastes like raspberries, guess what? Put raspberries in it. And just wine has that sense of, like, there's purity that, so it's just the grape. I'm not a wine fan, but I get that there's delicate yeast expression and terroir and all that. But ultimately, wine, to me at least, and I am uneducated on the subject, tends to taste like wine. And you have your varieties of red, and some are sweeter or more full-bodied or anything. But yeah, with beer, you do have that, such a broad spectrum. An Imperial Stout tastes nothing like a Saison, which tastes nothing like a hazy IPA. And you have that. I am convinced that anyone who says they don't like beer just hasn't tried the right one, because the flavor ranges are so broad. You have sweet, you have sour, you have bitter, you have savory. There is something for everyone there.
Well, generally when people say they don't like beer, but people go on about gateway beers. Yeah. And a gateway beer is often, it's like a craft lager, or it might be like a slightly less hoppy IPA, which is kind of crap. I like going the different direction. I'll just give someone a sweet Belgian triple, or a stout that tastes like wagon wheels.
Yeah, so that, I think stouts, sours, and hazy IPAs are often the way to go with that.
So one of the points that I find really interesting, just at the towards the start of this book by Melissa Cole, she's talking about umami, which was on a worldwide stage that was introduced as a fifth flavor in 2000. So of course it was coined in, but not of course, you might not know this, but it was coined by a Japanese chap in 1908 called Ikeda. It's something that now all of us accept in the last 20 years, that umami is a flavor. And she says that she wouldn't be surprised at all if in the very near future, fat were to be added to these definitions of taste. And in beer, we talk about mouthfeel quite a lot. And a thing that I have not tried yet, but has really piqued my interest, is a new ice cream from Giappo. So if any of you listening haven't heard of Giappo, that's the name of a man and an ice cream shop in central Auckland. And this chap is just an absolute flavor genius. He's such an interesting guy to talk to about flavor. But this week I read that he'd released a flavorless ice cream, and he just spent a huge amount of time working on the texture, the temperature, the mouthfeel. That's such an essential thing in beer, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I think one of the interesting things about that you were telling me earlier, so one of the things about that ice cream is like, he's been asked like, does it just taste like cream or milk? And he's like, no, it's flavorless, and it's all about the texture and the feeling.
Yeah, so I don't know if maybe a flavorless beer might be on the cards.
Maybe we'll give it a while. We'll make beers that taste like stuff first, and then see how we go.
I mean, it could be a kind of a fun thing to create three beers that are all the same style, but have extremely different mouthfeels.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is such an important aspect of beer that often gets overlooked. Is like, I mean, we see it a lot, particularly with hazy IPAs and imperial stouts and stuff like that, where a big, thick, creamy mouthfeel has become so important to a lot of people. And you see it, like, particularly with so many dark beers that come out. And there's some beautiful examples of porters and stouts, like your dry Irish stouts, your London porters. Mm. And like you go on Untappd and look at the reviews and like, oh, it's a bit thin. It's like, it's not supposed to be a pastry ice cream bomb. Like, yes, the pastry ice cream bombs are delicious and they have that mouthfeel, which I as well am a big fan of. But it's not the be all and end all of a dark beer. And similarly, a hazy IPA. So I think it is, to me, actually more important in hazy IPAs than it is in dark beers, where you have that, it's this thing that Garage Project do so well with their monthly releases and Deep Creek and those really top tier hazies and New England style IPAs, is that thick, creamy mouthfeel that a significant amount of them, that is the point where they fall short for me in terms of kind of really delivering on the promise of the style.
Yeah, just having the body. I was actually just listening to an interview with Paul Jones from Cloudwater this morning, and he was talking about the Dipper series, which of course was so iconic in Britain, and that really kicked off the whole New England IPA movement. And the Dipper series came from him making a Hopfenweisser, which was a style that was brewed by Schneiderweisser. Originally, it was a collaboration with Brooklyn, right? The first Tap 5?
I'm not sure.
I think it was brewed as a collaboration with Brooklyn many years ago before they sold out. Need to correct that in the show notes. And he just got interested in the idea of a very hop-forward beer, but without the bitterness and with a big rounded body, and using wheat beer type yeasts, and that's sort of where the idea came from, which is interesting. But yeah, you're so right about dark beers and just the expectation that they should have the consistency of custard. And yeah, you'll be talking to people about, you know, a barley wine or an old ale or a big porter, and it's like, well, they shouldn't have a very thick body to them.
Yeah, well, there's a place for that, but I mean, it's also, again, it's diversity. There's your light and dry London porters, which are actually really drinkable and clean. And there's your maple paper pancake imperial stout from Dunkin's, which is
also amazing,
but a very different thing.
Yeah. So have you been watching anything good this week while drinking beers?
I have. I've been, Netflix have just released the second series of Love, Death and Robots, which is an animated anthology series. So an anthology series, if you don't know, being kind of in the style of Black Mirror and a few other shows like that, where each episode is kind of along a theme, but not necessarily connected by story or world. Love, Death and Robots Season 2 has just come out, and it's just a really cool showcase of different animation styles and different science fiction storytelling. So some of it's comedy, some of it's quite dark, some of it's very human stories, and some of it's kind of action and adventure. So each episode's only like between 5 and 15 minutes long. So it's really nice bite-sized content, and it's just really good quality short form storytelling.
Brilliant, I'll give those a watch.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks for pouring, Matt. What are we drinking here?
So now we're drinking this week's Beer Jerk Beer of the Week, which is from Emporium Brewing down in Christchurch. And it's called Breath of Columbanus, which is a Belgian triple.
That's a good name.
It is a good name. I wonder who came up with that.
So Finney's a good mate of ours. So he's the owner of Emporium and the brewer, and he does most things there. And he was telling us about this idea for a triple. And he generally brews quite small batches. So he said he'd brew it just for our members, and we'd take pretty much the whole batch. And he asked us if we had any ideas for names.
Yeah, so we started looking at, obviously tied into our inclination to name things after historical figures. We started looking at saints, and we actually found that the day he was brewing it was the day of Saint Columbanus, who was in the around 1500s. He was an Irishman who went travelled around France, or may have been Gaul in those days. I'm not sure if what when France became France, but that region, and doing missionary work and stuff like that. And we saw that he had once one of his miracles that's ascribed to him is that he destroyed a cauldron of beer that was being brewed for a pagan festival, and so we thought that was a kind of a cool tie-in with the historical figures that we love to talk about and the day that the beer was brewed.
Well, and he destroyed it with his breath.
Did I not say that? Yeah, that's the key thing.
I don't know if he just blew the whole thing away, or I don't know if he just had really rotten breath.
Maybe he's like Superman, he has ice breath.
Yeah, probably that. Yeah, let's go with that.
All right, cool. So this guy was basically Superman, and he destroyed some beer.
And it's a triple made with honey.
It is. So there is one thing to note on this beer. If you're a Beer Jet member and you've got it in front of you and you haven't yet opened your bottle yet, we did get a heads up from Finney about a week ago. As this is a bottle conditioned beer, means that there is live yeast in the bottle and it's naturally carbonated. But due to the time of year, obviously our respective brewery and warehouses are quite cold places to be. So the yeast needs to be at a certain temperature to consume the sugars to create the carbonation there. And while normally ambient temperatures are sufficient to for the yeast to be active, in this beer, Finney gave us a call and told us that it had been a little bit cold, so that the yeast hasn't had a chance to fully carbonate the beer. So we've stored it up in the office here instead of in the warehouse, which is a little bit warmer. Tom gets a bit jealous when we crank the air conditioning up here.
Tom's fine.
He's fine.
Don't worry about Tom.
we did store it up here to try and get that yeast going. But nevertheless, he recommends that if you've got one at home, pop it in a warm place for a few days. Hot water cupboard is ideal, or just anywhere where you've got a kind of around 20 degrees or potentially even higher ambient temperature. Give the bottle a bit of a swirl around to get the yeast active again, to get that carbonation. Otherwise, you might find the beer is a little undercarbonated. We're drinking it now and it still does have a bit of carbonation to it, but it is on the low side. So yep. If you want the best experience drinking this beer, just make sure you do that.
So after all that Matt's just said, it's not a huge deal. It just would be that your beer is going to taste a little bit flat if you don't warm it up a bit. And obviously, being a triple, you do want it to have a nice fluffy head.
In the traditional style of Belgian triples, really, it's got that kind of lovely Belgian yeast character. A little bit of spice, a little bit of banana. There's a nice kind of sweetness that runs across the whole palate, just from the first sip right to the way to the finish. And then, but that kind of yeast plays softly across the whole palate. You've got little pops of spice and. Yeah, it's a really delicious beer, actually.
It's good. And traditionally, a triple is made with candy sugar, which is, it's normal white sugar that's been transformed with a Maillard process, which this beer has not been made with candy sugar. It's been made with some honey in place. So I actually had a good chat with Finney and did an interview. So the first ever interview for the Beer Jet podcast, as we're on episode 2. So we're going to play that interview later on in the podcast and tell you a lot more about Finney, his family, the brewery, a little bit about the beer. But the honey that was used in this beer is from a local...
apiary?
Yeah, is it called an apiary?
I think it's called an apiary.
Some local apiarists harvested some honey from their local bees, and it works deliciously.
Yeah, it's really good. Now, Belgian triples are obviously traditionally from Belgium, but the... There is a kind of diminishing tradition in Belgium of the Trappist brewery, where most of the world famous Belgian triples, Westmalle, Westvleteren,
Orval.
Oh, is Orval a Trappist brewery?
Yeah, the Trappist, right?
Oh, great. Well, they are brewed by monks and
Tint Meadow in England.
Yeah, and there are a few Trappist breweries outside of Belgium. I believe there's one in the States and maybe one or two in the UK.
I think there's one in France.
One in France, but by and large, it's a Belgian tradition. But it's one that's unfortunately dying out because there aren't enough monks to brew the beer. So to be Trappist, you have to be a monastery. The profits from the beer have to go into the monastery and to get that certification. That's a tradition that's kind of rapidly going away. There was one brewery, Achel, in Belgium, which had to close recently because their last monk died. And I've heard stories of a few others who just don't have the recruitment as people turn away from those ancient traditions, and not many people are called to the Brotherhood of Monkdom.
Actually closing? I thought they just had lost their Trappist stamp.
Maybe it is just losing the stamp. But yeah, it's a shame to see that go away. Mm. But as religion is waning, it might be something that continues to happen, unfortunately. And while it's a lovely piece of brewing history, I doubt it's going to have any impact on the long-term health of the Belgian triple as a style, because the recipes are still there. In Belgium, the beers are still being brewed, and they're still being brewed by great guys like Finney.
Thanks, Finney, for making a fantastic beer. Yeah, you'll be hearing more from Finney later on in the show. Well, what's beer news this week, Matt?
Well, there's been a bit going on. I think one of the most high-profile pieces of beer news that we've had this week is around the Australian International Beer Awards, the AIBAs. It's an award ceremony that happened about a week or two ago over in Australia. And our mates here in Auckland, Deep Creek, on the night took home the Champion Large Brewery Award.
Well, they got the Champion Beer with, it wasn't Roselaire,
it was Sauvage.
Sauvage.
And Brett Farmhouse Ale.
Yeah, gorgeous beer from their barrel program. And they just won an armful of awards. And rightly so, they've just been producing some really fantastic beers. Forever, really, but it's really in the last sort of 4 years or so.
Yeah, they've really ramped up there. And their new facility in Silverdale coming online, producing some fantastic beers. And they've been doing some contract brewing as well, where if you've tried any particularly good behemoth beers in the last couple of years, they may have come from Deep Creek, though they've also been brewed at other places.
Course, Isthmus.
Isthmus, the head brewer Hamish Ward's little side project, just got a really good place in the New World Awards. Mm. So there's some really great stuff coming out of that brewery. But unfortunately for them, it is not in the large brewery category. They made a bit of a mistake on their awards entry.
So apparently there was a mistake when someone at Deep Creek was filling in the paperwork, and they overlooked the word hectolitres. So they entered the amount of litres the brewery produces in a year, and the IBAs read that as hectolitres. So they overstated their annual output by 100-fold. So yeah, that was a bit of an easy mistake to make, right?
Yeah, so, Deep Creek are actually the ones who found that mistake, because they said after a weekend of partying, they came in and were like, how did we win Champion Large Brewery? they did a really great post on social media. They've handed the award back, which has now gone to Germany's Weinheinsstifaner.
Also a good brewery.
The oldest brewery in the world.
Yeah.
Which is, it's really cool to see that someone with that tradition and history taking out the award. We're not sure if Deep Creek would have won the Champion Medium category if they'd entered into that one. Nevertheless, they produced a bunch of great beers, won some great awards, but unfortunately that Champion Large Brewery was returned.
Great job to Deep Creek, and really nice just seeing their wild ferment beers getting real recognition.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the barrel aging program there is very, very exciting for sort of us geeks. Most people are most excited about their hazies, which are brilliant.
Justifiably, yeah.
Yep. But yeah, it's their barrel program that I'm especially excited about over the coming years.
Yeah, I still haven't cracked into my bottle of Framboise Noir, which is a barrel-aged raspberry dark sour, which I'm very excited about. But there's some other news out of the AIBAs, which we're pretty excited about, which is the Hop Nation Awards. So Hop Nation are a Melbourne brewery who took home the Champion Medium Australian Brewery, Champion Victorian Brewery, the Champion Amber Ale, and I believe they took home a Champion Pilsner as well. So four great awards. We've actually got our Hop Nation beers arriving today.
Yeah, the truck's landing this afternoon. So it's Wednesday afternoon today. So yeah, they'll be available later this week.
Yeah, so hopefully when you're listening to this, it'll already be published. We've got a new 11 beer mixed case from them that's going to be available, including the Buzz, which is that Champion Amber Ale, Jedi Juice, or what is it, J Juice as it's
J Juice now, yeah.
I think the mouse had something to say about it.
It wasn't actually. So Disney didn't get involved with them having a beer called Jedi Juice with a picture of Princess Leia on it.
It was that advertising people in Australia, wasn't it?
Yeah, someone complained that the beer can was called Jedi Juice. It had a picture, a drawing of a tattooed Princess Leia. And someone complained saying that children might find it appealing and children might buy it from a liquor store. So I don't know what those same people would think about some New Zealand beer labels that are heavily cartoonified.
Yeah, well, there's all sorts of it. I mean, but yeah. Anyway, so that's J Juice is now available.
Both of us try not to list any names, so we're not slagging off our mates with cartoons on the labels.
I'm fully behind the mates, not the people who took it down.
So. Exactly. Yeah. Of course.
But yeah. J Juice, Melbourne Fog. We have what might be the only Australian fresh hop beer that's ever been in New Zealand. Ground Control from Hop Nation as well. So a really exciting brewery.
Looking forward to drinking a few tonight.
Yeah. We've got a bunch of other new stuff going on. Our fresh IPA box is renewing as it does at the beginning of each month. Got some fantastic beers in there. Death Crush from Choice Bros. A pairing of a hazy and a West Coast from Epic. A new Baylen's hazy, West Coast IPA from Brothers, and a double IPA from Duncan's, his classic Big George. So that is available to buy now. There's also, you can sign up for it as a subscription, receive the freshest IPAs delivered to your door every month and save a bit of money on that selection.
Yeah, so our fresh IPA box is a curation we pull together each month. We choose 5 different beers and you get 2 cans of each. But if you subscribe to the fresh IPA subscription, you get shipping's included in a special Chiltainer that comes with an ice pack in there, and I think you save several dollars.
$89.
$89?
Yeah, and it's normally $100 for the box, so you're saving $11, and shipping's included there, so you really, that would normally be $8. So you're saving a bunch by subscribing, and yeah, all the beers have been canned in the last month.
Yep, and you can cancel any time if you wanted to give it a go.
Yeah.
So that's our advertising spot for this week.
Well, the other thing that to talk about ourselves is the launch of our loyalty program, which we've called Bottle Caps.
Yeah. Well, people keep talking about Fallout. I don't know what Fallout is.
Well, Fallout is one of the best video games ever made. Fallout 2 is the best one. Anyone who tells you Fallout 3 is the best one is not old enough.
Not Street Fighter 2 Turbo?
Street Fighter 2 Turbo is pretty good, but it's no Fallout.
Okay, Fallout 2.
So I had something to do with naming and bottle caps. essentially, it's a loyalty program, a rewards program where you earn a bottle cap for every dollar that you spend on our website. Each bottle cap is worth 5 cents. You can save them up and spend those discounts on future orders. You can refer friends. You can gain points by liking us on Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff. You get some points just for signing up. If you've been a customer in the past, you'll already be a member, and we have already gifted existing members 150 bottle caps to get you started. So you can go and check that out. It's just a nice way to earn yourself a bit of future beer money.
I think it's a pretty cool scheme, and hopefully it's something that all of you guys listening are going to take advantage of and get some cheaper beers.
Definitely.
What else?
There are a bunch of new beers out this week, as there always are. So we've had 2 new beers just come out from Sawmill. Up in Matakana. They've put out a double IPA, classic West Coast double IPA, kind of your piney, citrus, resinous, and the latest in their sour series, which is a peach and mango gosa, so nice, fruity, refreshing. Both those available in full 40ml cans. From Choice Bros down in Wellington, we have Paranoid Android, which is their collaboration with Wellington Chocolate Factory. What they were telling us is they were, obviously they're just around the corner, everyone being just around the corner in Wellington. And they were hanging out talking chocolate and talking Radiohead have decided to brew an American brown ale together, which has cacao nibs and cacao husks from the Wellington Chocolate Factory in there. So kind of nice chocolatey brown ale, and that's super limited. I think they only made like 35 cases or something.
Okay.
It's there's not going to be much of that around. So if you want to get your chance to try some of that, I'd get in quick.
I'm keen to see what Manai's put together there.
Yeah, and when we were in the brewery having a chat to him, there was a really exciting dark beer project going on that we can't wait to see. But
yep.
We'll find out some more about that in the future when he's ready to tell people about it. The other new releases this week are Brothers Idonaut, which is a West Coast IPA with Idaho 7 and Equinaut. That's one of the ones in that fresh IPA box.
That's a really cool label on that can.
It is. It's kind of like a holiday postcard vibe to it.
Yeah, I like it.
The latest edition of Hallertau's Double Stout. So the so it's a beer they've been brewing. It used to be called Nocturne when I first started drinking it, and it's always a classic. It's just a nice, just classic imperial stout, 8.8%. Your balance between chocolatey sweetness and that roast coming through.
Mm.
So if you really want an iconic classic imperial stout, that's available now. And what one of the things I like about it is it's in a 330ml bottle. So it's, I often find with your big beers like that, people putting them in 440s, 500s, or even 650ml bottles. It's just like five standard drinks. I'm not going to drink that by myself on a Wednesday night, mostly. But yeah, so Hallertau 2021 Double Stout is just been released as well. So that's another fantastic beer.
And that about wraps it up. And as I'm finishing this glass of triple, I am not looking forward to having a run later.
Oh, when are you ever looking forward to having a run later?
Never. I fucking hate running.
Then why did you start a running club?
Well, you've got to exercise, right?
No.
You do something.
I demonstrably don't need to do anything.
Yeah, you just survive, drive around in your car.
I do.
So yeah, Beer Jack Run Club, in case you don't know, is a club that I started about 3 years ago. So every Monday night, a bunch of us get together, run 5Ks, drink a beer or two. And this week, for the first week ever, I'm going to run twice in a week.
Yes.
Because yeah, a bunch of members have tricked me into going on a second 5K run. So I would definitely be having a beer afterwards.
Well, you're going to regret having a beer before it as well. But
it might help. It might give me like extra energy and kill some pain.
I wouldn't know. I don't exercise.
So. You would not know.
Okay.
And that about wraps it up. And over to Finny.
Hello, Finny. How you doing?
G'day, Luke. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm all right. You are our first guest. So great to have you on. Thank you.
No worries. Thank you.
I was just having a bit of a look online at your YouTube channel. So we'll come back to that in a little bit. But
first
of all, let's introduce you. So you're Paul Finny from Emporium.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah, normally known as just Finny.
Could you paint a picture of what Emporium looks like physically?
Physically, yeah. So we've got a brewery down in Kaikoura, and on our site, we've got an 18-hole mini golf course, and we've got two escape rooms. And hopefully by summer, we'll have a bar. So we've just got consent through to start the work. Hopefully next week, if we can get the builders organized. But so it's kind of a multifunctional site. And of course, you know, the brewery's in the back, just sort of doing its thing. But it keeps us busy, definitely.
So, very exciting about the bar. I didn't know about that.
Yeah. It's looking forward to that. Yeah, it's going to be a bit of work, but fingers crossed it starts soon.
Well, all of Kaikoura is by the sea. So how far are you from the coast?
Oh, I mean, if I caught it well, I could probably hit a golf ball into it over the road. So from where we're on the, the mountain side of the main road that goes through town. And then that main road, as you're going through, there's one lot of sort of buildings, and then you're onto the foreshore and down into the sea.
Sounds like a pretty nice spot.
Not
to be.
Far away. Oh yeah, it's cool. Like we don't, unfortunately, because we're in a dip, we can't see the sea, but we get mountain views the other way. So sitting in the bar, you'll be able to see mountains and country, rolling countryside. So it's going to be a lovely spot to sit.
Oh, beautiful! Well, every year you organise Kaikoura.
That's our little beer festival. So that started.
That.
Yeah, so that started as sort of an offshoot of, what was it called? Oh, the Good Beer Collective, which was a bunch of brewers and bars in Christchurch doing stuff together. And as part of when we had the earthquake here in Kaikoura, after that, we sort of wanted to, you know, use our sort of tranche of the market to bring people back into Kaikoura. So we started off the Kaikoura. So the first one, gosh, that was when we still had no road north, and it pissed it down. So there was ended up closing the road south, and then the inland road, which was our only route in, there was two accidents that day that closed the road. So we it was a bit of a test, that one. But it's gone, I think we've just had our fifth one. So it's the first weekend in March every year. So it's only, we sort of limit it to 300 people. And we invite normally four other breweries, which generally all come from Christchurch. It's more of a local sort of event. And a few of those sort of smaller breweries that are keen to come and basically, you know, our friends as well. So we have a quite, you know, we enjoy a nice day in the sun and then roll the doors down and have our own little beer festival afterwards, which is quite enjoyable.
Oh, sounds fantastic.
But yeah, great lineup of beers. We always ask the brewers to bring at least two beers that have not been released before. So either there'll be festival beers or just beers that are being released into the market, but they'll be released that day.
Very cool. Back to Emporium. So what does your team look like at the brewery?
So the team is myself, my wife, Laura, and then we've finally got a full-time assistant. Well, I'd say assistant, Kayla, that joined us in the summer. We've kept her on over the winter. And that's generally because we've got the bar to build. So that's going to take my time away from other stuff. But yeah, Kayla's great. And she just mucks in with anything that needs doing. So pretty much any bottled beer that you'll drink from ours is bottled by Kayla. And then, of course, we've got Hazel, which is our nearly two-year-old daughter, and Poppy, the brewery cat.
Oh, good little team.
Yeah, it's just a small little team. Generally, you know, over winter, it's quite quiet, so we don't normally need too much more, but the beer side of things is picking up. You know, we're getting busier and busier, so it's finally meant we've been able to keep some help on, which is great, because it means we can have good time off together with Hazel, which is nice.
Yeah, a holiday.
Yeah. Progress, signs of progress.
Yeah, what a tricky thing for a small business owner, hey?
Oh, yeah. Hazel's, she's a bit of a nightmare around the brewery side of things, but she's great with the customers. She loves being at the front desk and grinning to people and chatting, and yeah, very sociable.
Oh, brilliant. Well, you started your brewery in 2015, and you weren't always in Kaikoura, right?
That's right, yeah. So we started as a contract brewery, brewing out of the what was called the Twisted Hop Brewery. I think it's now called Budgie. So the first couple of batches we did out of, oh God, what was then called Stainless, the brewery behind Pomeroy's. I think it might have even been Four Abs at the time. I don't know. It's changed. So it's changed names so many times, that place. But yeah, started out contract brewing. Then we'd sort of, Laura had had enough of doing podiatry, and we were looking for just a spot to put roots down for the brewery. So found this site in Kaikoura, which just happened to have an old dilapidated mini golf course in the background, but had good, you know, the building already had three phase power and drainage on a sort of brewing platform area that used to be a shark liver processing plant. I know, right? So it had,
what do people use shark livers for?
Beauty products.
Huh.
So when it was around the same time, I think, as the mini golf, because the old mini golf scorecards have got the advertising for this stuff on the back. So you can imagine the place was a bit fresh, even after, you know, not being used for 10 years. You could still smell the sort of the fishiness.
Yeah, that sounds horrendous.
Yeah, I know. So the building's had a bit of a history and a bit of a life. It used to be a roller disco at one point.
Oh,
gross. As well. So yeah, it's funny when the old timers that sort of knew that at that time, they always come to me, yeah, we used to be here on Saturdays and we'd hang out with the mates and meet girls. And
oh, that sounds like a
cool little spot.
That sounds like a good idea for a beer series around the roller disco.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Before you started the contract brewery, you you had a homebrew business.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we started a homebrew shop in Christchurch called Finney's Homebrew Emporium. So that's where Emporium Brewing got its name from.
Tell me about the day you decided to start a brewery.
I don't think there was a day where I decided to start. Well, I guess I always joke to people it's a hobby that spiraled out of control. So I started off, you know, home brewing, and then started a homebrew club, and then started the homebrew shop. And then it was just a natural. I think if you go back 5 years ago, there was a lot of people that started out contract brew brands, which some, you know, haven't made it all the way through. But even probably Behemoth only started 6 months before we did, I think, probably only 6 months to a year. So it was around that time, there's a lot of people that wanted to get into the industry as, you know, avid home brewers were. But yeah, we just took it that little bit further and kept going, I guess, and ended up, yeah, putting roots down and getting the place here in Kakoda. But yeah, it's been a journey. It's definitely been a journey.
Well, it seems like such a unique business with, I don't know if there are many brewers that have a mini golf course.
No, not many, no. But I guess it is, in especially Kakoda, you've got to earn your money in summer to sort of last through winter. And it's a little bit different with having the brewery side of things. We can get our beer outside of Kakoda during the quieter times. But yeah, it just, honestly, it was just more that we were looking for a warehouse that had a bit of space to do either events or whatever we wanted. But this one was on TradeMe as a private sale. And yeah, when we looked at it didn't even mention it in the listing. But when we looked at the aerial photographs, we're like, that looks like a mini golf course. So we asked the guy, and he's like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, it was knackered. It, you know, it took a lot of gardening and stuff, but we saw it as a value, whereas the guy saw it as a, I think, because the place had been on the market for about 9 years, I think it was. But I think anyone who's looking at the big building from a mechanics point of view was then looking at this golf course going, well, it's going to cost me 20 odd grand to get rid of it and make it into usable car parking.
Yeah.
So I think that sort of played into our hands a little bit. So we, you know, we managed to get it at a good price. And it's quite nice being the sort of master of your own destiny when you're your own landlord.
And when did you build escape rooms?
It was probably about 2 to 3 years ago now. I think we'd already bought the site here. And then I think Laura bought an escape room like voucher for her sister back in England. And they went off and did it, and they came out and go, oh, you've got to do these things. They're great fun. And we were like, oh, okay. And then they were, her family were like, we've got a warehouse. You should put some in there. So we're like, oh, yeah, okay. So we went off and played a few and absolutely loved them. And so, yeah, just we've got the space. So we've they're actually in containers within the main building. So they're easy to sort of to redo. And yeah, it's just an easier way of doing it around building regulations. But yeah, they're great. It's a market a bit like crappy. It's a market that's just growing and growing. And this summer was just crazy. We could have done way more, but we can only run one game at a time with the current setup. But we could have easily doubled that over summer. It was so busy. It was amazing to see.
Oh, well, maybe that's some inspiration for other breweries around the country. If brew pubs can start making escape rooms.
I think now, coming into the market, I think you'd be very hard pushed to start as just a production brewery. Like having a route to market with either your beer, having a tap room, or having something else you do, you know, it certainly helps pay the wages. You think, you know, mini golf is money for jam once it's set up. You know, there'll be a lot of setup costs, but once it's done, it's just money. You know, it's a high profit item, and it brings people to the site. So they're great. Once the bar set up as well, everything just cross pollinates. It'll be great fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be a serious destination.
Yeah, because the cafe as well, the bar will be a games bar, if that makes sense. So we'll have lots of games you can hire out and sit and play. It's on a rainy day like we've had this last week. You can just sit and while away a couple of hours playing a game of, you know, Catan or Carcassonne. Sit and enjoy a few nice beers, enjoy the view and chill out.
Tell me about your early memories of good beer.
Of good beer?
Yeah. Oh. When did you first have had an epiphany, or maybe it was a gradual thing?
It's an interesting, I guess my journey is that, you know, being an English boy, I grew up, you know, sort of drinking pretty shit lagers and cider in the mainstream bars at the cricket club and whatever it was. And then I used to quite enjoy the Marsdens, the John Smiths, sort of like the smooth bitters.
Yep.
And I wasn't too fussed about what I was drinking, I guess, back then. And then Laura, my wife now, like when I met her, her father was into the real ales and had lots of like the Hobgoblins and what have you in his cellar. So I was drinking sort of nice real ales before we were leaving England. But I came here in 2007 and beer here, it's a lot harder to find anything that was sort of similar. So I ended up basically like you do, if everything tastes same, you just go for what's cheapest. So I was drinking like Flame or, all this sort of crap stuff like that. But I think, what was it? When I got my homebrew kit, it started changing what I was drinking and how I was drinking it, because I was then going, I'd drink, making my own, and I wanted to recreate those sort of English style ales that I'd been missing. And from that, I sort of, you just started thinking a bit more about the beer and how it's tasting. And then I think I went to Pomeroy's for the very first time, and I've been in Christchurch bloody years, absolutely. And rather amazingly, I used to live probably about two blocks from it and never went because I didn't really know about it, which was, now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh God, I could have been drinking great beer for so long. But I think I was in there and I tried a Croucher Patriot, which I remember just being amazing. Like that was, I can't remember what they call it now. I think it's Moonrider or something. That was their black IPA.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. And I was like, oh, this is great. And then I think, and the other one I remember tasting was the 8-wide. I don't want to say hot wired because it wasn't. It was a Sullivan. It was they did the Saison with the hot wired hot bill. I can't remember what it's called now. Sullivan Saison, I think it was. And that was like, man, this is amazing. And so that's when I started partial mashing and starting to just, use it a bit more grain stuff. So I tried to recreate that beer. And from then, just started really getting into the hobby at that point. And like I say, everything else just spiraled since. I didn't even own my own all grain brewing equipment when I started the homebrew shop. I was borrowing from a friend called Paul Fraser. So I made all the wedding beer for the wedding, and all that was made on his kit because I didn't have any. In fact, I think I just brew in a bag for a long time.
Well, it's a good way to brew in a bag, hey? You don't need much.
Yeah, kit, well, it works. I didn't even have a spigot on the hot mat to siphon out. And then, thankfully, when about a year into having the homebrew shop, is when Mangrove Jacks brought out the Grainfather, and we got a demo model, and so I've used that ever since for the small batch stuff. Yeah. It's a fantastic kit.
Yeah, works really so well.
Kit. Yeah. And then from the brewery side of things, I then created like a 50 liter test batch kit, which is now in bits because it's just been robbed for this, that, and the other. But I've just bought a Robo Brew, so I'm looking forward to trying that. Create some festival beers. For Beer Varna, and then for whatever other things we go to over the next year.
So is that just a 70 litre? What's a Robo?
Yeah, well, it's 50 litre finished sort of kit. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so that'd be cool to do some more test batches.
Yeah. Just try a few recipes out and just be a bit more experimental with a few things. A few of our top beers have come from messing around. Like Get to the Chopper, the whip beer that was started off in the 50 liter kit. So Amphioderic, the Flanders Red we did last year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So we've done a 600 liter batch of that now. So sitting and aging. So fingers crossed that's going well.
Well, you're clearly a natural tinkerer and experimenter with flavors. So I've just had a look at your sadly no longer maintained YouTube channel.
You haven't
probably gone in a few years.
No, I think it's been 6 years now, likely.
So you started making videos for YouTube just as a way to share cool ideas and recipes and to promote your homebrew shop?
Around that. One of the things, there was a homebrew competition called the SJ Port Challenge, I think it was called. But it was a YouTube, well, it was like basically a massive homebrew swap throughout the world. So there was different sort of regional. So there was a New Zealand one, and if you won, if you got in the top two or three from that, you then went into the worldwide case swap, and then eventually, you know, there's a winner. And so as part of that, you do your reviews online of all the other beers that came through. So yeah, it was quite a good. It was just a nice little fun way of spending some time when we started the homebrew shop. We were pretty had quite a lot of downtime. So yeah, it's just messing around and doing that. And that's where Angry Sky, our red IPA, the recipe came from that. And USA, the brown ale, that came from that competition as well, which have both gone on to medal at the Guild Awards as well. So that's why I love doing my test batching, but in the last couple of years, I've just not had time, which is annoying.
Maybe now you've got an employee.
Well, yeah. It's great. Kayla's great, and she wants to learn about brewing. So I think we're gonna dust off the old 50-liter kit a bit more often and get down and do some, maybe try some of these newfangled styles like the cream sour IPAs with, I don't know, whatever the young kids are putting on them these days.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Sam from Derelict Deal, let me know.
And I've actually just looked at the videos, and I've sorted by the popularity.
Oh yeah.
And one of your most popular videos with thousands of views is a banana wine.
Yeah.
What the hell is a banana wine?
It is what it sounds like. So you boil up a load of bananas with the skins on, because that's where you get your colour. It was when we were in the homebrew shop across from us, was like a fruit and veg distribution thingy, and they had a bunch of bananas that were going off. So they dropped some over and said, "Can you make anything with this?" I was like, "Well, I'll try." So I ended up making about 5 bottles and distilled the rest because it was horrible. So we've got some banana schnapps somewhere in the brewery, I think. And the remaining banana wine I distilled to make hand sanitizer with, because it was god awful. But some of them were better than others that came out of the homebrew Wednesday stuff. I think there was one video I did trying to make mushrooms from the grain. And I did the first bit and then never followed up with the second bit. I think a lot of people get sucked in and watch the video until the end and then like, well, what happens? Oh, it didn't work. That's why there's no follow-up video.
Oh, so you were trying to grow mushrooms using spent grain as the sort of substrate?
Yeah.
You mentioned Croucher earlier. I remember a few years ago, Paul Croucher brewed a oyster mushroom stout.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
It was fantastic. So I've been hassling him ever since to do an oyster mushroom stout again. I don't think he's that interested, so I'm out to brew my own.
He had a real nice body, I'd have thought. I did a seaweed porter once. That was nice.
I think those umami flavours really go nicely in porters and stouts. Quite unfashionable these days because everyone's more into the sweeter side of things.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll come back. Mushrooms. Things come around.
Yeah.
Well, earlier on, you mentioned briefly the earthquake, and I know you've had a few setbacks over the years in regard to natural disasters. So, what was the earthquake the worst thing to happen to you and to Emporium?
Because what did we do? We bought the building in April, moved to Kaikoura in the August, and did all the gardening and got everything. We got the mini golf and the off license open by October. And then November was the earthquake. So it's part of our story now, and it's part of, you know, it gives us, I guess, a slightly better story to tell than some others, the challenges we went through. But in the end, I think it just shunted the business back 2 years. You know, we were going into that summer, everybody in town was talking about it's going to be a record summer. You know, the numbers were up because Kaikoura suffered from the Christchurch earthquake as well, because if you look at the numbers before and after that, the numbers dived off here quite a lot, because Christchurch was the gateway to like this South Island. And if people aren't coming into Christchurch, they're not coming through up in, you know, up to Kaikoura and down, you know, through to Queenstown and stuff. So yeah, it was such a shame. Everyone's like, oh yeah, everyone's ready for a pumping summer, and suddenly it was bang. And you know, you got to think all the businesses here, like I said at the start, you earn your money in summer and it lasts you winter, and then you earn your money in summer again, and that summer money got cut off. Yeah, so it was devastating for the township. We were living at the brewery at the time. So we had such a low cost base, we didn't need, you know, we weren't in too much trouble. And you know, thankfully Laura was able to go back to Christchurch and do her old job. So we muddled through, we kept going and sort of just messed around a bit. And you know, looking at hindsight now, I probably could have got the brewery going a bit faster, but we had to sort of keep hold of all the money we had and just sort of wait it out, really. So now we got other jobs, and I ended up lecturing a business course at one point. And to get through. So we got through, and then you know, the pandemic came, but even the pandemic's not really slowed us down. We've turned over more beer and improved year on year. So we're still going. That's all you can ask, really. When you get all these different challenges and stuff, you sort of just get your head down and deal with it and just keep going.
I don't think many brewers get into this business to get rich quick.
Some people may think that we're all creaming it. It's definitely long hours for not a lot of pay at the start. But I mean, Laura and I gave up good jobs to start this thing. It's been a challenge, but you know, it was too easy when we had good jobs and lots of money.
Oh, it's a pretty good life, hey? Being in charge of your own destiny, creating delicious
things.
Well,
there is that. And that, you know, this last year, especially with being able to, you know, employ somebody as well, that's, you know, it's a huge milestone for us, that was. Yeah. It was, very pleasing that the day we said to Kayla, you know, we want to keep you on, and do you want to stay? And she was, said yes. But no, it's great. And it means it gives us a chance to actually spend time with our daughter as well, because we're not having to be at work all the time. And we're slowly but surely eking our way towards, you know, having a bit more of a lifestyle in Kaikoura, because it's a stunning place. You know, with the mountains and the sea and the topography, it's just, it's a lovely place to live.
I've been talking to you for ages. So this week, our Beer Joke members are going to be drinking the Breath of Columbanus.
Yeah, so thanks for the name.
I haven't tried it. you're very welcome. I just thought it was kind of a... quite an interesting story reading up about Columbanus. It seemed quite fitting for the triple. You use local honey in it, right?
We did, yeah. So in fact, if you go onto Country Calendar, there's a thing about them at the moment. It was not too long ago. Wildflower honey, I think it's called. So they're just up by Pekita, where the airport is. But they've got a lot of land that goes behind the hills there. And they have a lot of borage honey, and wildflower honey. I don't think it's any particular thing, but it's great stuff. They make their own mead as well, which is pretty cool. Hoping to do I'd love to do a braggart with a blend of sort of maybe one of our big beers and a bit of their mead, but I've got to get around to talking to them. But they do, they've got great stuff. We used some of their honey in the blast in the end of the boil. So how much of it comes through, I'm not sure, because it's quite a big beer. 9.8%, it sort of got carried away with fermenting a bit too much, which means, triples should probably be around that 7 to 8, but it's got a little bit big, but still nice and balanced. Hopefully the priming sugar's been eaten by the yeast now, because it did get a little bit cold in the brewery. What but chuck it in the, like I say, chuck it in the airing cupboard or something for a week and it'll be right.
Well, it's still going to be quite young for a triple, isn't it? Because
I brewed it in February, I think it was. So, because I knew it was going to be coming in around May time. With the strength it got up to, it maybe could do it a little bit longer, but I don't know, try one now, buy another one and try it in 6 months' time.
Well, that's it. I think it's going to be a really interesting beer to try over the next several years, actually. It will sort of meld and become more complex, and aging works so nicely with these sorts of beers.
Well, it's like with any big beer, you know, if you can try and keep hold of a few and see how it ages, maybe I'll keep a couple of cases back.
Hopefully you won't make them into hand sanitizer like the banana wine.
Hopefully not, no.
All right, Finny, last question. You are stranded on a desert island for the rest of your life and you have a beer tap that is a magic never-ending beer tap, what's pouring?
Yeah, I don't know. Can I remember? It's a hard one to say. There's some great beers I've drank over the years. Like, I really love Dead Guy and Fuller's ESB. They're both fantastic sort of multi-English style, I guess, beers. Either beer, Nota Bene or Hodgson IPA from Ben Middlemiss as well. They were fantastic beers. But I think if I was to have just one beer all the time, I'd just like a real nice, crisp pale ale. Because you want something that's just, if it's, especially if I'm a desert island, it's going to be hot. I want something that's thirst quenching. Maybe something around that 4.5%, nice hot character. Just so I don't get, I wouldn't want cases and cases of Cantillon. I wouldn't mind the odd one floating past now and then, but.
Lambic order every day.
Yeah, or the ESB. I do like the Fuller's ESB. It's a very good beer.
All right, so it's going to be ESB.
I think it'd have to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent choice. Yeah. All right, Vinny. Well, great to chat. Thanks so much for being our first ever guest. Hopefully, our listeners will enjoy us waffling on. And I'm really looking forward to coming down and visiting you and playing a bit of mini golf and visiting your pub.
Yeah, well, you should get down for Kekura next year.
Yeah, definitely. I'll book it in my calendar.
Yeah. Come see some whales.
Great plan. Hey, thanks again. And I'm going to hit end. Bye.
All right. Lovely. Thanks.